Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and I got my co-host, Clint McPherson, here. What's happening, man? How you doing?
Doing good, man. Just going strong. This is our second podcast of the day. We got to keep it going. I think it's your third podcast.
Yes, sir. Yep.
But we've got a very special guest on the show today. He has a top 50 marketing entrepreneurship podcast on iTunes, and he's helped consultants close more sales with less work. Before I introduce our special guest today, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and to our mailing list or our website so you don't miss out on all the free resources we have to help you start and grow your business. Also, the absolute best way to share your support is to share our show with your friends and family and get some you know, the momentum rolling for us. If you know someone who wants to learn about starting or growing a business, we'd be honored if you share that entrepreneur life with them. With that said, I'd like to welcome our special guest today, Joshua Tapp, to the show. How are you doing today, brother?
Dude, excited to be here. It's good to hop in and actually see you guys.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, we spoke a few months ago, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you're up to now and seeing if there's any changes with the business. But yeah, we're really excited to dive into it with you.
Well, in a couple months' time, I hope there will be some changes. So
for sure. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you're
especially the digital space.
Exactly. There's always something new going on, right?
It's always changing, man. Pivoting 100%. So Josh, man, with our audience and with us, this is one of the staple questions that we typically have on our show, but can you take us back to when your entrepreneurial journey actually started and what it is about entrepreneurship that really gets you fired up, motivated, and it keeps you moving day after day, brother?
Yeah, you bet. I'm going to take you back to when I was 8 years old. Believe it or not,
there it is.
First entrepreneurial venture, man. I'm actually a fifth generation entrepreneur. I don't know how many greats that is. Nice. Grandfather was a cattle rancher and kind of passed that on down clear to my grandfather. And but then basically my grandpa and my dad were both not as successful financially, but they were very, very successful people in my mind. And they really helped kind of teach us the value of, hey, I kind of grew up in an unorthodox home. You know, people were always told, like, hey, you're going to college. And I never heard that out of my parents' mouths. I never once. They never even asked me, hey, are you going to college? I did end up going to college, doing my master's as well. But I was raised saying, hey, like, how do you help solve a problem for people? And my dad wanted to, I think he saw that spark in me at that age. You know, I was 8 years old and he's like, he's already got the spark, you know, and he ended up, so he had a construction company and I grew up doing construction from the time I was, you know, 5, 6 years old, lifting a hammer. I was always digging holes or, you know, staining a cabin or something, right? Doing something that was awful. I hate construction.
Starting them young. Yeah. Why not?
I just remember as a kid being like, oh, if I had to do this the rest of my life, I'd kill myself. And then my dad one day came to me and he's like, hey, if you'll read a business book, as many as you want, you can read any business book you want. You can just come to me, tell me what you learned once you've read, and I'll pay you $60. Hmm. And I remember doing the math in my head and I was like, that's way more than I could make doing construction, right?
Yeah. Per so book.
What was that?
Per book, $60 per book.
$60 per book. Yep. And my dad was not a wealthy man. And so I knew it was a lot of money for him even at the time. But I remember he had this huge book, the bookshelf. And I walked up to it and I was looking through kind of his business section, and it had to be a business or a leadership book. I have to kind of preface that, right? I looked into the shelf. I was trying to find the thinnest book I could, because I'm like, I'm gonna maximize on the time. And I picked up The Richest Man in Babylon. Have you guys read that book?
No, have not. No.
I still read it to this day because it kind of kicked off my entrepreneurial spirit. But it's a kind of a parable type story about the value of entrepreneurship and how every problem can be solved through entrepreneurship. And I remember reading the book, and you know, my goal was just to tear through it. I didn't intend to learn anything. I just wanted to get the money from my dad, you know. And
sure.
I remember reading that book, and I read it like 4 times because I said, it's just so good. It was a good story, but it also just taught me the value of entrepreneurship, and it opened my mind. And I started my first little company. You know, I did I went to the end of my parents' driveway and started selling stuff from the end of the street, you know, like anything I could find in our house, any junk, like a polished rock, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I'd bring that to the end of the street and try to sell it. You know, I'd eventually start a lawn mowing company like every teenager, you know, every good teenager does. But then I started college, and that was when my first business actually started, where I started a Facebook ads agency. So that's kind of like the journey for me. But kind of my first real, like, I actually registered as a business company was a Facebook ads agency.
Nice.
That's very cool. Yeah. So did you tell your dad, hey, I read this book 4 times. I'll give you a bulk discount. Should be $60 times 4, 240. I'll give it to you for 200.
Yeah, no joke. And he was old. I'm like, hey, dad, you know, I'm just going to read this one 100 times.
Yeah, yeah. He'd be like, all right, you don't have to read any more books. You have passed the tests. We're good. Feel confident with you.
I easily over my childhood read 200 books.
That's amazing.
Entrepreneur books. The funny thing is nowadays, cool. I really don't actually enjoy reading my entrepreneurship material now. I'm actually audio consumer, I found, but that's kind of what got us into the podcast world. But it's so interesting because, you know, you learn a lot of things from those things, but you also get so much information that you get this like infobesity where you're like,
yeah,
all this crap in my head. Where do I start? You know?
Yeah.
100%.
I think I struggle with that is I'm not a big reader to begin with. Like, I don't really read books. My wife reads books. She loves to do that. I don't love it. I'll read like content. If I need to know something about whatever topic it is, I'll read a paragraph or a page or whatever, or I'll watch a video or listen to a podcast. But I think it's tough sometimes to balance like consuming information and learning about something and then actually getting it done. Because if you don't just at some point be like, all right, I know enough about this to get started, I can learn more about it later as I go. But I think sometimes people can over consume and they get real amped up on it and they get real excited about what the potential is for them, but then they just like don't do anything, you know, and you're like, hey, you got to get started at some point. So that's good. That's good that you've, you know, you learned a lot, but at the same time, you kind of knew when to dig in and actually start and learn hands on.
I think that's been a lesson over the past 2 years, honestly, for me, because you kind of feel guilty as an entrepreneur when you're not reading, because everybody's like, oh, you know, all the billionaires read a book a day, you know? And I'm like, if I did a book a day, I'd be so overwhelmed with what I had, you know, consuming. But what I found for me, I consume better auditorially, right? So I love listening to podcasts. That's like all I do when I work. I've got a podcast going in the background all the time. Yeah. But on top of that, instead of reading a bunch of books, you know, having read 1,000 books, I've picked like 1 or 2 books and I just deep dive into those and dive until I feel like I've mastered that concept. And that's helped me a lot. You know, you read it 15, 20 times over 3 years before you're like, okay, I've mastered this. I don't need this book anymore.
Yeah. I think that's smart. You know, dive in on something that you really go deep on, something that you know, or you're confident is going to really help you move the needle with your business. Cause there's so much stuff out there that could help. It could increase, you know, you could help you by a few percent here and there, which is all great. But if it's that 80-20 rule, if you're not really focused on the stuff that's going to get you, you know, that 80% chunk, then don't bother with 20% yet. You know, like it's so much more important. Like I've heard, I was listening to a podcast recently. It was actually the Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street podcast, but it's actually another one that he does called Sales School, which is pretty cool. And he was talking about how, you know, you can polish your system, you can polish your sales pitch, and you can, you know, polish things along the way that are going to get you some incremental change. But if you're starting with a bad lead, all that stuff doesn't matter. Like, focus on the most important thing is getting the right lead in the funnel. And then, once you got that figured out, then fix the rest of it. But that, I think that's so important. Going back to what you said about just finding something that's really going to be impactful for your business and go all in on that.
I mean, I think Josh, you hit it there though. Like, I think a lot of people are like, let me just read books. I'm not a guy that reads books and just can retain all that information. So I will have to read it several times to really get the concept and to master something. A lot of people are just like, hey, let me just read this thing because somebody told me to read it. I'm on to the next one. but are you really getting that concept? Are you really trying to master? Did that book actually resonate with you? I mean, sometimes it takes you a few times to really, like, you go back and there's chapters in books again, because what happens is in books, and the reason I don't like books as much is because a lot of it's bullshit, right? Like, right. 80 to 90% of a book is fluff just to get you to one concept, like, that you reiterate throughout the book in certain ways. And it's like, just give me the Cliff Notes version, the thing that's going to really, your real point. And then let's skip all over the BS so I don't have to waste time. And so that's why audio is a real good version too. And a hack for me was, again, say somebody records a video for 7 damn hours, dude. Like, there's right. so many things that I watch that are 7 hours long, but I listen at 2x speed, because once you realize and you start getting somebody that, you know, it goes quick, and your brain starts like, okay, my wife, she's all over here not paying attention. What the hell are you listening to right now? I don't know what's going on. I was like, because you're not actually paying attention. Like, I'm paying attention, right? Like, you can 2x speed something. And it's perfect. It almost sounds normal to me now. Yeah. And so I can get through something quick and save time. And now I'm on to the next thing. And my wife's like, dude, that sounds like they're speaking another language. Is that even English?
Yeah, 2X is pretty English. Impressive, man. But I can 2X, only do 1.5X.
Dude, try it. I'm telling you, your brain figures it out. Like, once you sit there, even audio, like podcasts, right? You can do that with podcasts. And dude, you can, like, as long as you're engaged and it's something that you like, right? And you can tune into. And that's why, because I'm a visual and audio person. Like, I'm not visual reading. I'll go to sleep, right? So, but I'm visual. Like, I like a video, right? And I like listening to them at the same time. So I kind of glance off. I don't have to look at your video the whole time to really be engaged with what you're talking about. But I like re-engaging and centering and focusing on everything. So, I mean, there's hacks that you can get into that you can really just learn some shit quickly. But you also got to make sure it's something that's relevant to what you're trying to achieve and not just some random shit that you're going to, like, just brain dump, because I think that's just a waste of your time, right? So it's finding those books or that sounds interesting, but really, let me read the Cliff Notes of this thing. Is it something I really want to dive into, or am I going to read this 350-page book, not get anything out of it, and just move on to the next one? I really think you have to have a purpose behind diving in some of these things. But yeah, for the audio thing, I really get where you're coming from, Josh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love deep diving into books, just because when you have that singular book, it's not about sitting down and reading for an hour. It's just you read until you find a point, then you go apply it. And then once you applied it, see where you're at, reanalyze, and then go back and say, okay, I'm gonna read the next section of the book because I'm ready for it.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite ones is Talk Like Ted. If you haven't read that one, it's great for learning how to speak in front of people and get your point across. And I love it, but it's one of those ones you've got to chunk. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to really absorb what you're learning. It's very tactical. It's not a lot of story, which I love.
but that's awesome. you just brought up a good point. Implementing, right? Like, we try to get through 350 pages or however many pages of a book and not implement shit until we get to the beginning. And now we have to go back to say, okay, well, this was a good thing. Let me go implement this. But, like, implementation while you're going through something, I mean, that's huge, brother. And I'm glad that's a good point that you just brought up.
Well, it's almost like shameful to watch. I'm in this coaching group. It's a really high ticket group to be in. And there's this guy who just hasn't, you know, as well as people who probably kind of got let in at a cheaper level kind of thing and really probably wasn't prepared for the coaching program. But he sent everybody a picture and he had a stack of books from the floor, almost as tall as he was. And he's like, it took me a year to read this. I've read as many pages as I am tall. And I remember looking at that and going, but what have you done with
but
it?
But why? Yeah.
Like, can your dollar bill stack up to as tall as your head? Because that would be a good indicator of, oh, hey, like, I actually, you know, like, I made that much. I applied it. That's just how I look, is I look at that number and say, okay, you read, you know, 40,000 pages or whatever, which, yuck, you know, how much time are you spending reading books? But how much time did you spend implementing that? You know, just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really all about implementation. And this, I think the second that you start feeling like I get antsy, I'll watch a 20-minute, and something I want to talk about in a minute is, you know, this all kind of leads back to find the medium that you like to find the means by which you like to consume information, right? So it could be through a book, it could be a podcast, YouTube video, whatever. I mean, we're on a podcast. We obviously, we all love podcasting. you know, but figure out the way that you like to consume information. But yeah, I'll be in the middle of like a 20 minute video and I'm like, I know that it's tactical. I know that it will help me, but I will still like 10 minutes in, I'll be so antsy. Like I just got to do something. I got to, you know, I feel like I have to do it. And then sometimes that bites me in the butt because I'll miss out on something. Like it's easy to then start implementing before you actually have learned enough. So it's really important to balance that. But yeah, I mean, podcasting is, you know, definitely something that's important for you. And it's a big part of your strategy.
Right.
And
our whole company is built around it. It's built around podcasting.
Right. Right. And so it's, you have a top rated show called The Lucky Titan, which is an amazing show. How can any business, especially consultants, leverage podcasting to close more sales?
So that's an awesome question. Honestly, man, so we built our entire company around this. I had, going back to my story with being a Facebook ads agency, right? I started that when I was doing my undergraduate program at BYU. And I think my sophomore year, I decided to take the leap and actually register it as a business and start getting clients. And when I graduated, I was making enough to not really need a job at that point. I was like, nobody can pay me what I'm paying myself. So I stepped out. But then the problem was I sucked at selling. It was really hard to keep the business in the door. And so I was constantly trying all these different things, even running ads for myself. But I could get ads for a realtor. I could get ads for a restaurant, but I could not get an ad to convert for me to actually generate a sale for myself. And I spent all this money and time and everything. And we had one day where he was our biggest client. He was about half of our revenue, which that's just word of the wise. If you have any client that's more than 30%, you're not safe yet. If they're more than 30% of your revenue, you're not in a safe position. But he was a half of my revenue. And he called me up as a real estate brokerage. We were doing it for their entire brokerage. And he reached out to me and was like, hey, man, you've provided so many leads. I think we're good for the next 2 years. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So he fired us because we had done too well. And I remember just sitting back in my chair going, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I'm not going to be able to get another client like him, you know? And I had this moment where I was just like, first off, this is not what I want to do. I did not enjoy Facebook ads. I'll be completely honest. That type of business for me was just rough. But I was in a mastermind with a group of guys, and this really wealthy guy I'd become friends with, he leaned over to me in the mastermind. He's like, dude, why are you so grumpy? You know, because the day before this is when the guy had called me. And I was like, dude, we just lost half our revenue with one client. And he's like, well, this is good. He's like, why don't you just start what you actually want to start? He's like, I know you always talk about podcasting. Why don't you do it? I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm just going to go do it. So we made a really drastic move, and I decided to close the Facebook ads business. I was like, I just don't like it. So we completely shut it down. And I'm like, I'm going to rebuild in the next 2 months or we're screwed. I'm going to have to go get a job. So luckily at the time I was doing my master's program in the evening. So it allowed me to kind of like take out debt to cover myself, you know?
Yeah.
But I decided to start the show. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to reach for the stars. I'm not going to interview, you know, small time players. I want to interview billionaires. I want to see if I can get in with a billionaire. And so I was like, I know one person who's worth about 100 million, and I know he has billionaire friends. So I invited him on and asked him, who should I interview? And he booked me with 40 people who made well over $100 million. What I learned from doing this podcast, and this is the method I share with the world now, is you don't need listenership to close deals. If you want to close high ticket sales, especially as a consultant, you can leverage the same method. So what we did is before I had even launched the show, I interviewed 40 people. And I was just listening to them and asking them questions about, you know, what is it that you actually need? What are your wants? You know, what are the desires that you actually need filled that I could fill? You know, I'm a college kid, basically, right out of college, really have very little experience. So I don't know if I could personally do any sort of coaching consulting for you. But for them, they were like, I want to meet other successful people. And one of the guys is like, I just want to meet your other guests. There's a lot of great people. And I was like, well, would you pay for it? And he's like, I'd probably pay like 10-15,000 to be in the room with them. And I remember going, holy crap, are you kidding me? I'd been trying to sell $500 retainers, right? So I was like, hey, here's the thing. I'll let you in for free if I can leverage your name. So he was kind of one of the bigger names, Josh Steinle, if you're familiar with him. I ended up calling all of my guests and just saying, hey, I want to do this mastermind with Josh. So it's the two Joshes, right? We're going to start this little mastermind. It's $10,000 ticket. We sold 8 people in like 4 days. Nice. And I remember going, holy crap, I figured it out. I cracked the code. We didn't even have our podcast up yet.
Right. Yeah.
It's just done the interviews.
Wow.
And that's the method that we teach to people is like it's you, a podcast is the number one way to get in the door with people, period. It's just a hot thing right now. Everybody wants to be on a podcast. Everybody wants to brag about themselves. That's why I'm here, right? I mean, you know, shameless plug here, you know, it's like, for me, it boosts my ego. It boosts your ego to be interviewed, right? And that's, even for somebody who gets interviewed all the time, they love it. You can get a billionaire to come on your show. Because if you say to a billionaire, hey, will you do me a favor and, you know, get coffee with me or, you know, give me some of your time, they're not going to do it. They have no time for it. But if you're like, hey, I have this show, and they're like, oh, I can promote my show or promote my business on your show, they'll come on. I mean, 99% of the time we get people to come on. And when they don't come on, it's typically because they're just booked for like 2 years. I've never had somebody tell me no to come on my show. And from that, we just leverage that into a sales opportunity. It's not about directly selling to them. It's just figuring out what do they need and then give it to them. And if you don't provide that service, find somebody else who does and then get a referral commission from it. That's my system.
So yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, affiliate marketing is definitely a great way to earn plenty of revenue, especially when you're referring like info products or, right, or other service. Well, info products, especially because usually the commissions are pretty high.
Yeah.
So how do you do that for like, it, you really leveraged for yourself, you leverage your, you know, your guests and were able to even charge your guests to be part of this group. How about if somebody's trying to reach an audience to, you know, and sell them? So you're a little bit more, right, like B2C type thing where you're, right, you know, you've got a service that you like marketing or product development in my case, and we're trying to reach an audience and say, hey, if you have an idea and you want to launch a business based, you know, you want to launch a product, come to me. If you want to market yourself using ads or SEO, go to Clint. How does somebody like that, somebody like us,
yeah,
you know, leverage podcasting?
So yeah, let me just walk you through exactly what I would do for you guys. If, you know, if I were in your shoes, because I've never been in the physical product space. We have lots of clients who are like SaaS companies or, you know, where it's business, mm-hmm, right? You're working straight to the customer. And what's really interesting about growing a show and growing your listenership is you have to turn it on its head and say, okay, how do I get the most valuable content that answers the questions that my ideal customer is looking to answer, right? Mm-hmm. They have a problem, how do I fix it, right? I'm not going to dive into that. Everybody talks about that, right? You need to know what the problem is and how to fix it. If people aren't buying, your offer sucks. Doesn't matter how good you think it is, but if people aren't just saying, give it to me now, you haven't refined it yet. That doesn't mean, yeah, to change what you're offering to them. It means you need to readjust your messaging. How are you saying it to them? So that's number one, right? That's what you need to know is like, how are you solving that problem for them? The second thing though, is it's doubling down on a single platform. So our company, Podcast Multipliers, what we do is we take your podcast episode and we turn it into content everywhere. We do video, audio, written, everything, right? Each episode becomes like 50 something pieces of content, I think, which is great. But when you're just starting, that's kind of stupid. You really don't want to double down on multiple platforms. You want to choose one. And it's like, mm-hmm, in you guys' case, you do B2B, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, right. Yeah. I mean, we're targeting customers who are wanting to, like for me, I'll actually work with a lot of inventors and startups. So they're sort of just beginning their entrepreneurial journey, but they want to launch a product, but they sort of are somewhere between a B2C type,
yeah,
thing.
It's like a B2E. I want to call it that personally. It's like business entrepreneur. Or like,
yeah, yeah.
B2S.
That should be, yeah, a thing. I think, yeah.
Yeah. We'll make it, man. This podcast is going to go viral.
There it is. You heard it first here.
He's like, yeah, check us out. Name drop.
B2E.
Yeah. So where I would start is doubling down on a single platform. So The first thing to be thinking about is the only platform that matters when you're trying to grow an audience is your email list. Everybody will try to convince, mm-hmm, you in social media and, you know, OPA or OPA is what people call it, other people's audiences. I believe that that's possible, but the execution is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time. I personally don't like putting my fate in other people's hands. I always, like, for every guest that comes on our show, we have a system that we send out emails saying, hey, promote the episode, so on and so forth. But that really doesn't grow our show too often. But what we found is if we can create some sort of system that gets people to come to our site where we can collect their email, once they're on our email list, I want to say it's like 80 something percent of our listeners actually come from the emails I send out every week from our list. And it doesn't have to be this big, complicated email. Are you guys on my list? You got to go check it out. It's very, very easy. But
I think I am. Yeah.
If not, I'll jump on it.
Yeah. You ought to check it out. Cause it's, I'm not sure. Saying that to like toot my own horn, right? But it's a very simple email, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where it's like, hey, this is what I talked about this week. Go listen to the episode. People just need to be reminded.
Sure.
And if they're if they're on your list, they care about your content. And so our goal is to just keep growing our list. All we ever do is say, okay, how do we get our email list to grow? And we send one email out a week and our podcast grows. That's literally the entire system.
Okay. And is it growing because they're sharing it? Is that how it kind of multiplies?
The listeners?
Yeah.
Is the email list growing or the podcast growing? That's
the podcast. So you're sending out one person is showing intent they like your content. So they're signing up, but they were already listening to your show. So if you just keep sending an email to them and they're the only ones that's the only list that is listening to it, then it doesn't really grow. Right. But do you think that those people, are you encouraging them to share it or what are you doing to get them to
multiply? And they naturally will. So the big thing is, this is a method that I use. It's one that not every business can do, but if somebody will leave me a review on the podcast, I'll say, hey, take a snapshot of it and post it on social media. If they'll do that, I will actually send them a video testimonial for their company.
Nice.
It takes me a grand total of 30 seconds to do it
for
a person, but it's a guaranteed review from people. So that's just a little hack, by the way, if you want to use that. So the big thing to grow your audience though, is you're sending that email out so that your existing audience will continue listening. That's huge.
Right.
Because if you have a repeat audience, first off, you never have to worry about diminishing numbers. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is that the platforms look at that. So iTunes will look at that and say, okay, they have a constant 100 people who are going to look at it, and it's in their best interest to show it to another 100 people, right? They'll show your show to another 100 people,
right,
saying, hey, this might be a potential show for you, because they know their job is to keep people on their platform. And if people are listening to your show, more people are going to come listen to your show, right? So the goal is just to get enough people reviewing and enough people to be listening to it. So our goal is actually never to be like going out and just saying, hey, go listen to my podcast. You're like boosting your content or whatever. Usually doesn't work very well. What we found is if you'll focus on just growing that email list and saying, listen to my show, they'll do it. It's, I think, anywhere from 15 to 30% of our email list will go over and listen to our show.
That's huge. Growing the email list and doing the nurture. Right. Like the email nurture is, again, reminding people that you're still around, continue to contact them and touch them. It takes like 7 touch points for somebody to actually typically convert to a customer or somebody that will continue to listen to you, your podcast or whatever form or fashion. But having somebody to sign up for your email list and not follow up with them, I mean, that's a good way to not grow, right? You have an email list that won't grow itself because you're not doing anything, implementing strategy for it to grow. And the key is, like you said, is coming up possibly with creative ways to drive them to your website. And then really when they get on your website, having them convert to your email list, because you can put all the bells and whistles on your website, but if they're just going to your website and that's not your end goal and your end goal is to get them on your list to grow, I mean, you're really doing yourself harm. Right. So.
Well, and if you want to maximize your guests, I'll just share this with you. This is, you might be getting more than you want, but really fun tactic here that we use like with your guests, like, hey, promote the podcast or whatever. What we found is that we could actually get them typically, instead of promoting that, to say, hey, we're going to actually do a giveaway for anybody from your email list who will come to this page and opt in to win the giveaway. Right. So basically what we do is we go to 5 of our guests every time. So basically like once a month, we'll pull together 5 of our guests and say, hey, if you'll email your list with this promoting your episode and promoting this giveaway. So saying, hey, if you'll go listen to this show, give us your email so that you can get this giveaway. It's usually like $100 gift card or something.
Right.
What you do then is everybody basically emails their list. The list come back to your page where they opt in. And then every person who contributed gets the emails. Nice. So when we do this every month, we're growing like 300 to 500 emails a month just doing that. And it takes a grand total of like maybe 20 minutes to implement.
Right.
That's awesome.
It's a great strategy. It works very well. And then once they're on there, the people who come onto the list, you're just sending them the email once a week, just saying, hey, here are the episodes we launched this week. And it grows that listenership much, much quicker. And I mean, it doesn't really cost you any money. If you're really smart, you just get the guests to also contribute to the cost of the gift card and you don't have to put anything into it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. right. Perfect. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that, man.
Those are high level strategies, but I hope it helps.
No, man, that's amazing. That's what we want.
That's on point, man. So Josh, I mean, appreciate you going over that, but when starting a business, man, we all know it's super important to know your audience, right? So if you don't target the right audience, your business is more likely to struggle or fail at the end of the day. Who is your ideal client and how do you recommend people figure out what their ideal client is for their business?
Yeah, our ideal client's name is Tom. Okay, so for us, Tom is somebody who's, he's got a business that he started that he either sold or, you know, he's had one really big success and he sold out of that and he's trying to start a new venture, right? So he's got an agency or he's a coach, basically is what he is, right? So he's a coach who's saying, I want to get my message, I want to give back, I want to build a legacy-based business, right? Those are the people that we target. You know, they've got the money, first off. That's a huge thing. Don't sell to people who are broke. It's number one problem you can make. But then secondly, they need to be somebody who's actively searching for a solution to your problem. So I'll tell you how we came to our customer and then I'll explain how I would recommend for you guys. So for us, what we found is, again, just listening to the guests that we had on our show, because I was bringing on Tom, right? I was bringing on our ideal client.
Right.
And I was just listening to what they wanted. They were all looking at our podcast going, I really want to have one of these. I want my own platform. And we looked at that and said, okay, there's already a lot of people who provide that service to people, right? But what these people really want, their core desire, they're never going to say it, but their core desire is like, I want to be freakishly famous for leaving. And I want to be famous because I'm leaving behind a really strong legacy, right? It's a legacy-based business.
Yeah.
And so for us, we're like, well, let's just make them famous. Let's just put their crap everywhere, right? So we built an agency around that. And I kid you not, we went just to our guest list, promoted it out to them saying, hey, to anybody I knew would be a potential client. We closed 30 deals. In like a week and a half, right?
Nice.
Big high ticket deals just doing that. And it was because they were already looking for, all these people had told me they wanted a podcast, right? We knew they were looking for it. And then they had the money. I knew they had the money. Those are the two big qualifying factors. But then the third thing is if they're willing to buy your product and service. So when you're looking at, if you're just starting out, especially as a consultant or coach or whatever you want to call it, because that's the bulk of your listeners, right? Or coaches, consultants.
Right. Aspiring entrepreneurs. I mean, we have a long list that we could probably go for, but I mean, at the end of the day too, you know, you got to really niche it down, right? To really be more impactful. And so we're still trying to reel that focus in, but I mean, me and Andrew both have ideas. And we're really just trying to add value to any entrepreneur's journey, right? We're just created an entrepreneurial podcast for entrepreneurs to come and listen. And really for our guests to really take something away, like for you, you're able to sit here and talk about how you're doing things or how you would recommend things. And it's something that our list of entrepreneurs, our listeners can actually jump off this show and start like taking notes and, or listen to the show, take notes and implement right when they get off of it.
Right. Love that. See, and with a lot of, like where you're at, right? You're kind of serving a new entrepreneurial audience. What happens a lot of times, this is just kind of my perspective, but what I've seen is a lot of people who target that group of people is they're targeting the poor people who are starting a business. They're not looking at the people who are, there's a lot of people starting businesses who have boatloads of cash because they have, maybe their parent just died and they have, you know, $500,000 sitting there that they're saying, I've always wanted to start a business. I'm going to do this for my parent, right? I want to do it, right? So like there are tons, I would say probably anywhere from 100 to 200,000 people per year who get that sort of inheritance, who are sitting here going, I want to start a business.
Yeah.
And you also have the groups of people who are saying, I've just sold another business, but I'm starting an entirely new industry like what we're doing, right?
Yep.
They're new entrepreneurs, right? Maybe it's a doctor or a lawyer, somebody, which I don't really consider them entrepreneurs per se, because they basically bought their job.
Right.
Not to discredit that they're an entrepreneur or not, but they're not trying to start a whole new idea, a whole new concept, right?
And they've got more, generally more cash than some other people do.
Right. And yep. Not to say that those people who don't have cash can't buy your services, right? It has nothing to do with that, right? But if you'll target those people, they're actively searching for a solution to their problem, where a lot of people who are just starting, I mean, I remember when I first started my Facebook ads agency and somebody's like, you've got to have ClickFunnels. And I'm like, $100 a month? That's a ton of money.
Like, that's insane. Yeah.
When I'm in college, man, I can't even afford to keep my wife and myself alive, you know? And people were trying to sell me on these products and services, you know, but what was crazy is I still spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on other things that I was actively seeking for.
Right.
But what's interesting is if you'll try to sell to those people who have money as well, who are actively trying to solve the problem, and they're saying, you know what, I need help. You know, I'm an inventor. I've just started this. I just got an inheritance from my dad. I want to get my physical product out to the world. They've already bought courses from Stephen Sommers and some of these other big name people, right? All you have to do is tap into that audience, right? And say, hey, they're already buying this. Why not just give them another solution to the problem? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's amazing. And that's a good, I mean, that's a great audience to, you know, to kind of focus on. We also do love, like, because we all started as an entrepreneur, you know, most of us started from kind of ground zero, right? So it's like the ultimate challenge is, hey, how do we help people who are sort of poor or, you know, broke or trying to figure out how to start something from nothing? But the reality is, like you said, you can't start something from absolutely nothing. Like at some point, like you either put a course or something on a credit card, like you're going to have to pay and invest somewhere along the lines. And that is tough. So it's either convincing people who don't have much money that they need to invest in something that they don't feel comfortable spending, or definitely the easier thing is to talk with people who definitely comfortably have that cash. But it is, I mean, I get people all the time who are like, I'll give them a quote and I think it just knocks them right out of their socks. And I'm less than big firm, big product development firm costs. I know it for sure. Right. So like, it's just lack of education, understanding of like, oh shoot, if I really want to develop and launch a product, well, just like any other business, you got to invest in yourself somewhere along the lines. That's like really, you know, really, really important. I mean, people who, because I saw this quote one time, I think it's pretty powerful. Millionaires had to invest thousands to become millionaires. Billionaires had to invest millions to become billionaires. You can't like want to be a millionaire and invest nothing in yourself and be like, that's just going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. So.
Well, and the point of that I love too, is it's not to say if you don't have money, be fearful, right? Like what you're saying isn't like, hey, I'm not trying to get you to be fearful, right? And your job isn't to pander to people who don't have money, right? It's if you don't have money, being an entrepreneur means being resourceful. It's go find the resources. Don't sit here saying, okay, you know, I don't have money, I'm going to try to do it free. Ask yourself, okay, instead of trying to do it the really hard, really long, slow way, where can I find the money, you know? And is this something that's worth bringing the money in, you know? And what we found is that, because I've listened to people all the time who are like, you can either invest money and do it quickly, or you can do it for free and do it slow. I disagree entirely with that, because what happens is you cannot make money until you invest, period. That's just like a law of nature. What happens is most people, even if you're starting for free, what you're going to do is you're going to make a little bit of money, but then you're going to have to spend all of that plus some extra money in order to make the next little chunk of money, right? And you're going to do that over and over. You're going to spin your wheels, when in all reality, if you could just make, you know, $5,000-$10,000 somewhere, you know, whether that's from a job or, you know, I don't always recommend debt, but like I did it on debt, you know, like credit cards or whatever you got to do. If you take that $10,000 and you hire the right person, they'll solve your problems. And for that's us, key, I always recommend is like hire Andrew, right? If you're trying to get a product out, that physical product, go hire Andrew, right? 100%. Clint, I don't actually know what you do. Now I feel bad.
Yeah, digital marketing, man. I'm in digital marketing space.
Sweet. So you're like, you know, if you're trying to market, if this is a physical product as well.
Yeah, I mean, so when it comes down to SEO, right? Facebook ads, do all that stuff, you know, paid love advertising.
You're the guy.
Dude, anything digital marketing wise, my company does.
That's awesome. So, I mean, if you need some help with that, go hire Clint. He's a great guy, obviously. You know, I've only met him like, what, 30 minutes ago?
Yeah, 30 minutes ago, man.
Great, great person to hire for that, right? But what we found is the best way to know where to spend your money is to actually go ask somebody who's five steps ahead of you, who did you hire to solve this problem? And we recently did this. Our leads, so we've been generating leads strictly through our podcasts for years, generating a lot of business for ourselves, but I'm actually in the mode right now where we're kind of switching to investor mode or buying some other companies. And so I'm trying to remove myself from the process as much as possible. So we're trying to implement a scalable lead gen system. And so I went to the guys who own Kitcaster. They're a very similar company to what we do. And I asked them, what's the agency who produces leads for you? Because they went from like zero to 3 million, I think, in like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
These guys like took off, right? And in the podcasting space. So I asked the owner, I had him on my show, and I was like, hey, you know, who did you hire? He says, you need to go hire these guys, right? Syntax is the company's name. We hired them. They're amazing, an excellent lead gen company. And we've produced tons of money just from the leads they produce. But that way I didn't have to say, okay, I have to go spend $50,000. These guys were like, I think $5,000 to hire them one time.
Yeah.
And they built a whole lead system for us. And I wouldn't have known that. I probably would have gone and just like researched, you know, I would have Googled it and found the person who has spent the most on SEO or on,
exactly.
on Google ads in most cases, you know, and probably got somebody who didn't actually align with what I did and had already seen success. And the reason this agency has done so well for us is I just said, copy what you did for Kitcaster and do it for us. And so they didn't have to create anything new. They literally just like copy, paste, boom, and I've got it. And we've got a great lead gen system that works.
Yeah, that's amazing. And are they doing paid stuff, organic?
This is all organic, stuff? Actually. Yeah. Connor, I'm going to make you pay me a this because I'm promoting you guys. But
yeah, it's a great shout out. Yeah, I'm going to check it out.
We prefer each other a lot now, but they literally paid for them. So that $5,000, we made that back within 2 weeks. Right when we launched the system, the next day we had paid for it, and then we've made like $180,000 in 6 weeks from working with them. Crazy. These guys are way good at what they do. Basically, what they do is they generate high ticket sales. I think it's through like LinkedIn and email is what they do, but they do it in a really non-sleazy way. Because I've tried the LinkedIn systems before, but this is a very kind way. That's what I like about it. Because our model is not in your face, right? We're very like we want to be your friend.
Yeah, no pressure. That's the way to do it.
No pressure, and that's how we run our company. And there's nothing wrong with doing it the other way, but for us, it's just not our style. Our results are not typical. I'm going to tell you the reason why ours worked so well is because we did our research and we said who's already done it. For example, because for you guys, they may not be the best person. I don't know, but if there's somebody else who does exactly what you do that they've done well, I would just hire them. Because I think we also, this going back to reading books, I think we get caught in this trap of like, oh, I'm going to buy coaching programs and courses and all this stuff. If you just spend the money to have somebody else do it, it will work 9 times out of 10, where if you're doing it yourself, it'll work 1 time out of 10.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're trying to recreate our wheel, right? I mean, or right. trying to figure out the whole process when all you really have to do, like you said, find a company or find somebody that is basically, you know, they don't have to be doing exactly what you're doing, but it's something within the realm of what you're doing to where it's like, dude, you're killing it, man. And like who built this process for you? Because I'm very confident that if they can do the same thing for us, that we can kill it too. And there's so many fish in the sea, man. You know what I'm saying? Like there's so much business out there to be made, and there's a lot of people, I think. And I learned this early on, is like everybody views the next person as a competitor, man. I just see it as another opportunity. And I'm one that if a guy's doing digital marketing, I can talk to him. I don't feel intimidated, right? Like, it's like, hey, man, we can learn from each other. We can actually benefit each other. But a lot of people are more like hesitant, you know, and like kind of standoffish and like, dude, this guy's trying to come for my, you know, for my Wheaties every morning. And I'm like, bro, no, I'm not trying to do that, man. I'm trying to like just share, you know, what I've been through, learn, because we can all learn from each other. Yeah. So I really see his competition as more of like a learning experience, and that we can learn from each other, and not somebody again trying to take my Wheaties out of my bowl in the morning.
Yeah. What I love about that, Clint, too, is such a cool point, because I mean, for us, what we found, we're basically a marketing agency, right? We have a niche thing that we do. We work with podcasts, right? But so you and I would be looked at as competition. But for, believe it or not, our number one client is actually marketing agencies and our number one partner, because you're providing a different solution to the same problem that we're doing, right? And so it's very easy for me to say to my clients, hey, you know what? We're killing it over here on your podcast, but if you want to run ads, Clint's your guy. This guy has an amazing strategy for your SEO and for your ads, right? And it's not taking away from what I'm doing. And you know, you asked me this a while back of in the interview of if I was a consultant, what would I do? Is I would honestly stop trying to be the person who provides the solution, as far as being the end all be all. Hey, I'm just going to coach you, and I'm like, what comes
out? Yeah, like I know everything.
Change your business, right? What you do is just say, I'm the guy who knows everybody, right? In my case, like if somebody hires our company, I won't tell you straight up, like we don't do all of the work in-house. I have like three different agencies who do work for us, but people pay us ridiculous amounts of money because we're saving them the time of finding the right agencies to do each piece.
Yeah, that's hugely valuable. And you put it all together for them. Yeah.
Right. And if you're the consultant, you just run the strategy. And that's mm-hmm. just marketing, but it's the same thing if you're like a management consultant or you're a leadership consultant or what have you. You're like, hey, my package is $100,000 because what you're going to do is you're going to hire this coach. You're going to join this program and do these three things that somebody else has built. Yeah. And then I'm going to guide your team through it. And I mean, way more money, way less work on your part. And 100%. People, the rich people are willing to pay for that because you're saving them time. That's what you have that they don't.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And you have to balance that. Some people have more money we all have a finite amount of time. So I think we all have to value time a little bit better than a lot of us do. Like I've got a product-based business too. And sometimes we'll look at things, we're trying to save like $20 a month or $30 a month. And at some point I'm like, to my business partner there, I'm like, dude, we gotta just pay the freaking $30 a month or $300 a month, because for that little amount of money, for us to even consider that every month and for it to interrupt the rest of our schedule, just that interruption is alone pretty much worth that little bit of money that it just, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but it only takes 2 minutes. Yeah, but it takes 2 minutes and interrupts us from something else. And then we actually lose more than 2 minutes. And then sometimes that 2 minutes turns into 20 or 30, you know, like, so you really, and then that could happen over multiple days. So all of a sudden you're just wasting this finite amount of time trying to save a few bucks. And it's just like, you've got to be smart with it. You can't, you know, if there's some service or something that's like $20,000 a month, you might not be ready for it. But you can be like, all right, I want to do that, but what are the things that are a little more in my budget that I can do now to get to that point? And then I'm like safe and comfortable. And then everybody's happier. As the consultant who's charging $20,000 a month, they don't want to work with somebody who's like terrified to spend that. You know, they want to work with like, hey, no, go work with somebody else until you get to this point, and then we can work from there. So,
well, the amount of pressure as the consultant, I mean, when you're like, this is their last dollar.
For sure.
I tell people, I'm like, please do not hire me if that's just, that way too much pressure. I'll keep me up at night, because I'm like, if we don't perform together, I mean, I've lost you $20,000.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. An entrepreneur, I mean, starting a business is risky. Like it's not, nothing is guaranteed. Just because you spend $100,000 or more on something, it doesn't mean that you're guaranteed to be successful. There's so many factors to it. So,
yeah.
I mean, you got to think about it that way. But yeah, you're right. It's like it is terrifying. I've had some clients who, you know, I feel like this is their last, you know, $10,000 to develop, and they're using it to spend to develop a product. I'm like, it could be good if you have a good plan, but it's a lot of pressure. Yeah, like this is just the first part too. Like there's more to it. You got to have the full strategy. You got to understand how all the different costs come together. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
physical products, you need to have a little bit more money on hand, in my opinion.
Piece of shit.
It's not a risk. It takes the risk away.
Exactly.
You bring money to the table. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No, there's definitely a little bit more to it, because you've got inventory, you got to manage that. But there's so many people doing, I mean, I definitely advise people to start with something relatively simple. When some people come to me with these super elaborate, complicated, you know, products, and I'm like, A, that's going to cost a ton to develop, and I'm okay to do it. I'll do it because that's more money for me. But it's going to be really difficult to get over that development and inventory hump and to really get it out there. And then what happens if it doesn't work right? Like, start with something pretty, you know, as simple as you can, and then, you know, get that, figure out how to make that successful, and then start another product and work your way up to where, yeah, if you're doing $10 million a year and you want to start something super complicated, then
you could throw $1 million at it and not do it yourself.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Then you really don't have to worry about it. So, and if it doesn't work out, it's just, you know, it's a write it off as a loss and, you know, move on to the next thing. So,
yeah. Love that.
So, Josh, through your entrepreneurial journey, from the highs to the lows to everything in between, what's been the most difficult thing for you about being an entrepreneur?
The number one thing for me, and this is a kind of a little more of like a personal thing, is I really don't like upsetting people. It took me a long time to learn to handle conflict. And the hardest part for me was finding people. I'll share a story with this, right? So I had a guy, this is really early on in my journey. I decided to partner with him instead of, so he basically gave me a percentage of his company to do his marketing instead of asking for a retainer. At the time, I was under the assumption that he already had an existing business, but he didn't. So when I joined, I wasn't making money. There was $0. I thought I was joining, I was immediately making money, and then we'd increase the revenue or whatever, right? So I built him this big elaborate system. And then at about 8 months in, because I was still new, it wasn't really working very well, he's like, we're done. And then 6 months later, he calls me up and is like, hey, you owe me money. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? You
know, like, honestly, I did that for free.
Yeah. I did it for free and I put a buttload of time into it. Anyways, it wasn't really a lot of money. He came after me for like $6,000, right? He wasn't going to sue me over it. I think he was just like, he's like, I want you to hold, because he wanted me to pay for all the softwares and things that we had used and all this. And I was like, but that, anyways, it was this big, crazy, ridiculous thing, right? But that kind of like scarred me for life, because it made me super averse to wanting to partner up with other people or to have any sort of conflict in business. And so that's been the hardest thing for me. And even just in the last year, I've been really working on that, because you know, those sort of things are like major traumas in your life where you're like, man, like $6,000 would have sunk me at that time. I had to give him payments for like a year in order to pay that off.
Right. Yeah.
Which was stupid and whatever. Right. But yeah, you got to have integrity sometimes. So
yeah,
all the time. but anyways, that's honestly been my biggest struggle. And I think a lot of people don't look at it that way for themselves. They're like, oh yeah, I'm a happy person. But for most entrepreneurs, I think half the reason you're not succeeding is because you're trying to avoid conflict.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn to actively not seek the conflict, but seek those uncomfortable situations and learn how to be in control of the situation enough to win, make both parties win.
Yeah. And get the right clients. Like that can, right. I had a bad client like a year ago, and he still kind of lingers around there every once in a while. I get an email, you know, I'll be copied on an email and I'm like, I want to be far away from you, bro. Like,
right. I've got a few of those ghosts that come out all the time. You're like, oh, just get out of my world.
yeah. Like, please just do your thing. I want you to be successful. Truly.
Right.
I do. I want him to be successful. I want all the people that I work with to be successful. But man, his expectations were wild. And yeah, his vibe was the opposite of amazing. So you gotta, and it just really, really, really brought me down, because I'm like you. I think most people probably are. You don't want to piss anybody off. You want to help people. You don't want them to have a bad experience for whatever reason. So that was really, it's so draining. It's so emotionally draining when that happens, that I've learned how important it is to get the right client. I had a job a couple months ago that I sent a quote for, had a pretty good conversation with this group. It was a group of people who were working on this product, and it was going to be a pretty decent sized job. And I really wanted it. But then I had a call with them, and and they weren't like on the same page. And one of them was very like aggressive and kind of, she was just asking all these like questions that were, I don't mind. I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions, but the way that she was asking these questions, I could just tell it was like an attacking thing. I'm like, whoa, we're not even doing business yet. What's it going to be like when we're doing business? And so I actually, what's that?
The red flags.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's important to get a little better at seeing those red flags. And so I just decided I was going to take the project despite the red flags. And then they came back and said, hey, we've decided to go another route. And I was like, thank God. Like I didn't have the guts to say it and say that I needed, like, this wasn't going to work. But thank God. Cause I mean, yeah, the money, you definitely look at that chunk of change and you're like, ooh, that would be really great. You know, that'd be a nice project to be working on. But then it's so important to put that aside and be like, hey, are these people going to be good to work with? If no, then no matter how much money it is, it's not worth it.
Right. Well, no amount of money is worth monopolizing your time.
I mean, no, not at all.
If she's that nitpicky on the sales call,
right,
with that lady would be a nightmare.
Oh, for yeah. Sure. And I talked to her patent attorney who had referred them to me, and he was nice about it, but I could tell he was like, he had plenty of frustrating times with them over a couple of years. I'm like, nah, I don't really want to deal with that, but
yeah.
So it worked out though.
100%. Yeah, so true. Love it.
So Josh, man, I believe we can talk to you all day, brother. And I know this podcast episode's went a little bit long, but as we wrap up this episode, man, if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, something that you really think they could benefit from, what would it be?
The one thing I could share, and I do share this with a lot of people, is that entrepreneurship is actually not risky. We are in an age where all of the risk has been removed. You're not going to be thrown in jail for being an entrepreneur who can't pay back their debts, right? Back in the day, you would have been thrown in prison if you couldn't pay off the bank for a business you started, right? And nowadays, not to say that bankruptcy is the right thing, but I mean, that's the worst case scenario, is you have to declare bankruptcy. That's the worst case. And you can start again from there, right? But if you want to mitigate risk in your business, this is just my recommended model. Work a job or work something, work for another business, whatever you got to do to save up enough cash to have 6 months of cash available to take care of your family with just a little bit extra to throw into a business, a couple thousand dollars extra to throw into a business. Then try a business for 6 months. And if by the end of 6 months, it hasn't worked, go back, save up some cash, get 6 months of cash, do it again. If you'll do that two or three times, I've never seen somebody had to do it more than three times. Because the first business is highly likely to either be really hard to succeed at, or it will be, or it'll fail, right? it'll yeah. fail. And some people get lucky on their first try, but what most people don't know is that 80% of second time entrepreneurs actually succeed in their business. That nuts?
That is why, yeah. It's persistence that's so key.
Right. There is literally a new millionaire made in the United States every 2 minutes. Like, there's so much wealth to be going around right now. Take the risk. It's worth it. I mean, there's really no risk if you use that sort of model. So that's my thing is I want everybody on this planet to stop thinking tying risk to entrepreneurship, because it's not risky. It's very, very easy to be an entrepreneur. So that's my piece.
That's awesome. Yeah. We actually, Clint, I don't know if you remember that there was one episode we had somebody on who was talking about how it's the same amount of risk being an entrepreneur versus having a job. It's just different risk. And if you kind of look at it like that, it's like, and I actually think it's riskier to have that job in the long run, because you're just biding your time until you get to like 65 or 70 or whatever. And then you better hope you put everything together right. Exactly. So that you have enough money to carry you through the rest of your life, you know? Yeah. And
I think that's, they don't fire you and your fate's out of your hands, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can work your way up. I was talking about this with somebody recently where you can work your way up to a really great salary, 6+ figure salary, and in a job, and that's great. but sometimes that's inflated. Because you've been at that company for long enough, they've actually taken you above what your market value is. So let's say you make $200,000 at a job, and then or let's just say you make 100, because this is a little bit easier, right? You make 100. What's that?
It's easier math. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes a little more sense, where if you make 100 at a job, but then really your market value is 75. Well, that's a pretty big difference. You know, it's a good size difference over the course of a year, a couple grand a month that you were used to. You get fired from that 100,000. You realize, oh shoot, my worth is only 75,000 a year. And you've already, a lot of people push their lifestyle up right up to exactly what they make. And all of a sudden they're in big trouble and they can't make that $100,000 a year again. Whereas in business, usually things compound on each other. So it's not very likely that on average, you're going to make a significant amount less 1 year over the next, especially if you're working on growing it.
Right.
Well, guys, I think that's a wrap for this episode. And from the both of us, Josh, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and joining us and adding value to what we're doing on our podcast.
Yeah, you bet, guys. It was awesome being here.
Yeah, awesome to have you on, Josh. Thank you. And thank you all so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Josh is working on, check out theluckytitan.com. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to download our free ebook about the success mindset at thatentrepreneurlife.com.
Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs, and don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.